The Warrior Soul Podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppinfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. You know, at some point, every single one of us is going to suffer. None of us are immune to tragedy, to hardship, to difficult times, to obstacles. And we all have a choice when that happens. We can either allow the tragedy, the hardship, the obstacles to break us, or we can use those obstacles to make us stronger. My guest today is no stranger to obstacles. 3 days after coming back from a deployment, he got into a really bad car accident and became a quadriplegic. And then 3 months after that, just as he was settling into his new life as a quadriplegic, his fiance got into a fatal car accident and passed away. His name is Noah Currier. He's a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and he is the creator of Oscar Mike. Oscar Mike is both a clothing brand and a 501c3 charity. And if you're familiar with the term, Oscar Mike means on the move. And Noah is one of the most inspirational people I've met on this show. One of the most inspirational people I've had the pleasure of speaking to. I can't imagine what it must have been like, not just to experience that tragic injury, but to experience that tragedy as well in the aftermath. And speaking to him, you know, I think put a lot of things in perspective for me, and I hope that hearing the conversation puts a whole lot in perspective for you. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Hope you get a whole lot out of it. I don't have many announcements. All I got to say, guys, is that if you like this podcast, if you've been enjoying it, please subscribe. Please share these episodes out. And if you can, please write us a review. My goal is to get this podcast into the ears of as many veterans as possible. And I need your help to do that. So please do so, And with that, let's get into this conversation with Mr. Noah Currier, U.S. Marine Corps veteran and creator of Oscar Mike. Noah, welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Chris.
Happy to have you here, brother. You're out in Illinois dealing with the freezing cold and the snow right now, right?
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's all good, man. At least we are in the United States and loving life right now, right?
Amen to that, brother.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure most of my audience knows exactly who you are, but could you give us just like a quick 3-minute summary of who you are, where you come from, and what you're doing right now?
Yeah. Well, name's Noah Currier. Grew up in a small town called Poplar Grove, Illinois, a little farm town, and was a Marine from 2000 to 2004. Was in the invasion of Iraq. I was with 1st Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion, and was hurt 3 days after I got home from the invasion when a guy fell asleep at the wheel, another Marine, broke my neck in the accident. Went through a long period of, you know, like trying to figure out what the rest of my life would look like. It was a pretty dark 6 years, 7 years, and eventually found adaptive sports and started redefining my mission, I guess. And I started an organization called Oscar Mike. Oscar Mike means on the move in radio jargon, and I just want other people to be able to kind of find what I found, and adaptive sports is the key to, figuring out what you're still capable of after your injury.
Wow, man. And so literally, 3 days after you come back from that experience, you're thrust into this situation. Let's talk a little bit about life before that. What was life like for you then? What made you decide to join the Marine Corps?
My dad, who adopted me when I was 5 years old, he was a Marine back in the early 70s. I think he joined in 72. And he didn't really talk much about it, but at the same time, just knowing that he was a Marine, I was always super proud of that and excited to become one. So I knew I wanted to be a Marine as far back as probably fifth or sixth grade. I guess he's probably responsible for it, either that or Gunny Hartman in Full Metal Jacket, because I watched that about a billion times.
He got everybody, man. He got everybody. I watched that too. And the thing is, what's crazy about it is like, it's not a like pleasant story about the Marine Corps either, right?
No, but you really got a sense of the hardship that they show in there, mm-hmm. and then how they make a Marine, and I think we all kind of put him up on a pedestal of, that's what a Marine Corps drill instructor is like, and that's the kind of man you want to break you down and build you back up. And, you want to test yourself to the max, and that's the form to do it.
Yeah. It's him and Animal Mother, I think, are the two characters out of that whole thing that everybody loves. Right.
Yeah. I mean, Joker's pretty great too. And I think every single platoon and every unit in the Marine Corps has one of him. What's funny about those movies, like Full Metal Jacket, is every single character in that movie is in every platoon in the Marine Corps.
Yep. You know what's funny? I had Dale Dye on, and Dale Dye was friends with the author of that book, the original book. And supposedly Animal Mother is a little bit of Dale Dye. And what's it called? Also, Joker has some elements of Dale Dye in him too. Okay. And he was like Dale's, for those of you who don't know him, he's a consultant on Hollywood movies. Like he's consulted on Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan and all those. And he's one of the guys responsible for making sure that Hollywood movies get more accurate. But he's got such a crazy personality when you talk to him. He's a real interesting dude.
And wasn't Gunny Ermey, I mean, he was an actual gunnery sergeant and drill instructor who was just there as a consultant and ended up taking on the role because if I could imagine how it all played out, he's sitting there correcting every single thing that happened. And eventually they were just like, you know what? We want you to play the character.
Yeah. The legend is that he got so frustrated with what was going on. He started going on there to show people how to act like a drill instructor. And he had people throwing tennis balls at him while he was holding his bearing and doing the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that story, but that doesn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah, man. That's such a great movie. And he was in, I think he was in a couple of other ones too. I mean, I think he was a drill instructor in Boys at Company C. And he was in The Siege of Firebase Gloria, which is another great movie that not a lot of people have seen.
You know, what was hilarious is seeing him in Saving Silverman.
He played like didn't he play like a gay coach or something like that in that?
His character was so funny in that. And to see him go from, you know, like all the other roles that he played to that, it was pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's awesome. So you're watching Full Metal Jacket. You came through. You got through boot camp, going into the Marine Corps, going into the fleet. So you went in 2000. That's just before September 11th, right?
Yep. Yeah. I was about a year and some change. Just finished doing the mountain instructor's course. And it was actually September 11th happened while my unit was at Mount Town doing our week-long thing there. And I remember that morning like it was yesterday. And I was just kicking some sleeping bags, giving everybody their like 15-minute warning that reveille. And next thing you know, this Jeep is flying down the road. Yep, you know, the guy was yelling a bunch of crazy stuff. When he got up, we realized it was our first sergeant. He's telling us to get inside and turn on the radios. And we did, and you know, we're listening to the scene unfold, and we went back to our barracks immediately, and then we all flipped on our TVs and saw what was going on and started packing our stuff up.
Wow, that's pretty insane. And so he
was adamant, we're going to war, you know, get your stuff ready. And
yeah,
you know, he was just crusty old first sergeant who at the time, I think we all thought he was crazy and that's not the way things happen, but he was right.
I think we all had a pretty similar experience there. I mean, it was kind of the same thing with us as far as everything goes. We were getting alerts. We're like, you gotta get ready. Everybody's like lock and load. And then it was a lot of like hurry up and wait.
Yeah, exactly. We went on, got on the ships, and I guess we were part of the 13th Mew, and we just sat out there in the Indian Ocean hoping that we were going to do something the entire time. 7.5 months of just waiting, and we called it Operation Enduring Boredom because nobody really got to do anything until after that deployment.
Yeah, and that is my experience in the Marine Corps. For the most part is a lot of waiting and feeling like you're in the midst of this massive column that is doing things at somewhere, but you are just a cog in the wheel and you are going to sit there and you're going to wait until it's your time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, until the invasion of Iraq, that's definitely the way I felt. Even floating over there, before the invasion, none of us really thought it was going to happen, you know, especially because our previous deployment, the last 7.5 months prior, it was just like, you know, just sitting around waiting and then nothing really happening, at least for our unit. And then the invasion of Iraq, I think none of us really thought that it was going to actually happen until about 2 o'clock in the morning on March 19th. You know what's crazy about all that too? If you don't mind me sharing something that just happened recently. I was at, a friend of mine was graduating from the FBI Academy, and I went down and watched the graduation. And after the ceremony, we were going in this room while we were waiting before we could start getting like tours from our friends that graduated. And I'm sitting there, and my dad was there with me, and he looks over at me and he's like, "Hey, is that General Kelly right there?" And I look over and I'm like, "Holy shit, that's General Kelly sitting right there." And, you know, in civilian clothes, sitting at a table right next to me, we're just eating cheese cubes and waiting for the next thing, you know, to start. And then there's this Marine amputee, single leg amputee, who had just graduated too. He introduced me to him, and it was unbelievable. I mean, I just sat there having a conversation with General Kelly that was so candid. And, you know, he right away asked what unit I was in and when. And when I told him first LAR from 2000 to 2004, and I was in the invasion, it immediately we connected, and he started telling me about all the decisions that he was making that were affecting my unit, you know, and wow. To hear that from the general's perspective, you know, and then how he remembered, you know, very specific times, where he would say, you know, "I remember I needed you guys to do this and that." And then from my perspective, I was telling him how it was affecting us. And I'm like, "Man, I didn't know that you were the person that made that call. But when you did, you know, we spent the next 48 hours going up and down the river looking for a spot to cross. And, you know, this is what happened. And this is how it all unfolded." And I mean, I wish I could have sat there with him for hours talking about it, but I only had about 20 minutes.
It's interesting when you get around someone like that who has had so much authority, and what you start to realize is that their authority in large part is in their ability to relate to other humans and to communicate. Because yeah. A lot of these guys, they have crazy memories. Like, they're able to remember things like that. They're able to pull details out like that. And it's really a talent that a lot of these higher up guys have.
Yeah. And yeah, the relation that they have, you know, or care that they have for others, you know, like some of them, like General Mattis, I mean, that's what he's famous for.
Right. Right. Exactly. I had General Mattis's co-author on Call Sign Chaos on here, Bing West. And, you know, he was talking about that, just that ability to relate to other human beings, to see things that other people don't, and to, you know, just have that power of recall. I mean, that's something I want to work on like crazy too. And, you know, you're in a position now where you're leading a lot of people, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really view it that way, but yeah, I mean, I'm in it with them. I'm participating in everything side by side with everyone. So, you know, I guess you can call it.
That's leadership, brother.
What's that?
Well, that's leadership, you know?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about Oscar Mike, how it came about, because I know you had your accident. You said you had a dark 6 years, right?
Yeah. So I had just gotten back from the invasion. I was doing fine mentally, I felt like, you know, and I don't think any of the effects of any of that kind of stuff even start to creep in for a while. You know, and usually it's after the transition out. But then I went from the invasion to being paralyzed to right when I got home from the hospital. I had been with a girl for 7.5 years at that time, and she fell asleep at the wheel on her way home to my house after work one night. She died in the accident. And so it was just, you know, like that destroyed me. I felt like I was doing all right with mentally from the war. I was doing all right mentally from my accident. But when she passed, I just, it was the last straw. I broke, and I broke hard.
Holy crap, man. That, how long after your accident did that happen?
It was within a couple months of me getting home from the hospital out of rehab. So it was really fast.
And, you know, I mean, I couldn't imagine being in a situation like that where my significant other, somebody who I loved, was just taken from me in a time when I was at my most peak of vulnerability. What types of things did you do to recover from that?
Well, I didn't really want to, you know. I think the suicidal tendencies were at their max. I did, you know, I didn't want to reach out to anybody for help. I didn't want anybody's help. I just had no desire to continue on. You know, my purpose, my passion, my love, everything was gone. And so was my physical ability. You know, right before we started the podcast, you know, when we were talking, you were telling me about jujitsu and being sore, and you know, I was telling you how much I missed jujitsu because that was a big piece of me prior to my accident. You know, my always just testing myself physically, and kind of you know, turning my body and mind into a sharp weapon, you know, was what I really enjoyed doing. And then that was all taken from me. I felt like, you know, now I figured out that it didn't have to end there, you know, and I'm glad that it didn't. And you know, I think the only reason that I didn't end up following through, even though I wanted to every day and was sleeping with my rifle, basically just trying to get myself to pull the trigger. I was staying at my parents' house, and my room was right down the hall from them. And I just didn't want my mom to find me like that, because she was already, you know, if you could imagine, I can only imagine what it's like being a mother and having to spend 24 hours a day awake watching the news to see, you know, a glimpse of your son's unit, you know, and the worry that comes along with that. And then, you know, and then having to watch me go through rehab and, you know, barely surviving an accident to being a quadriplegic and paralyzed from the neck down to watching your son lose the love of his life. And, you know, she was having a really hard time with all of it. And you could just see it, how it affected her. So I didn't end up, you know, I never pulled the trigger. And every day I would kind of be angry with her without her knowing the reason why I was angry. But, you know, it was like, this is all your fault that I can't pull this trigger. And, you know, in the end, it ended up being a blessing because now I get to do what I do. And, you know, and I wouldn't change it for the world now.
Was there a specific thing that kind of made the switch in your head that kind of pulled you out of it? Or was it just kind of like a gradual thing that, you know, you woke up every day and it became a little bit easier to deal with?
No, a friend of mine showed up unexpected at my house one day and just, you know, the area to my room, they remodeled a two-car garage into like a little studio apartment for me. And my friend just showed up unannounced, walks right in the door, and he saw me sitting at the edge of my bed with my rifle. And I quick put it down and just pushed the pillow over it. It was already too late. He saw me. And he basically, you know, pretended like nothing had happened there and just talked to me like a friend normally would, or said all the same things that he normally would, except he told me that I should go to, this event, this skiing event for people with disabilities. And it was coming up real, real soon. So he signed me up or helped me sign up for it. And, you know, then I had this thing that I had to wait for, you know, to come around the corner, and I went with him. At first I definitely resisted. He had tried to get me to go the year prior too. And I didn't go because I thought, man, I'm a quadriplegic, you know, skiing is not going to happen. And then I eventually agreed to it and I went, and, you know, I was sitting there at the top of a mountain, and I talk about this all the time. And I just say, something clicked in that moment, because I felt like alive. I felt fear. I didn't know what the outcome was going to be when I started going down this mountain. I thought I was going to break everything I had left. But that fear and adrenaline that I had gave me something that I hadn't felt in a really long time. And I quickly became addicted. I mean, I do have a pretty addictive personality, and, you know, I got hooked on that basically, and life again. I signed up for school almost immediately after that. I went skydiving right after that. I signed up for the National Veteran Wheelchair Games. I started competing in things, and the trajectory just changed like immediately.
With there's something I think about seeing the world and how small you are in the world that I think creates switches like that, like being on top of a mountain and seeing how that thing could kill you, and or being out in the middle of the ocean, for example, that just kind of snaps you back to the present, and it kind of helps you to put your problems into perspective, right?
Right. Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know. I think that's one thing, because the more we stay in, because I work from home, right? This is like a little tiny room. I live in a little tiny house in California on like the edge of the desert. And I find like, if I don't get out of this room, and I don't go out there into the world and I don't see the world, then the self-talk, the story up in here, that starts to take over a little bit. Right? The story in your brain. And it really is a story you start to tell yourself. And that story starts to become more and more real the more you indulge it. And I think it's important for all of us to get out there and get out of our heads at some point and get into something else.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that one of the things that I wanted to do, you know, when you're in the Marine Corps or any branch of the service and you're doing something really shitty, or really hard, you always make it through it. And the reason that you do is because you got all these guys and girls to your left and right, you know, that are going through it too. And I think, you know, it's often referred to as the suck. And how do you make it through? You know, you're looking around, you got all these people that are not only supporting you, but they're also not giving up, and they're not giving up because you're there. You're not giving up because they're there. So, you know, same thing with trying to figure out life after your disability. You know, wouldn't it be easier if you had a bunch of people who could relate that have chewed the same dirt as you to be to your left and right? And I use people all the time for that. You know, my mind is always channeling all these people that I've met now, probably, you know, thousands that are living with disabilities, who have, you know, had to endure and overcome.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. When, so you got into adaptive sports, when did the idea for Oscar Mike come about?
Pretty quickly after. I mean, I think I started thinking about it back in like 2009-ish, but then I shared it with a bunch of other people in like 2010 or 11. And in 2011, we built a ghetto website and turned my two-car garage into an office and warehouse, and launched it on Veterans Day 11-11-11. We didn't have a clue what we were doing either. I mean, half the time I still feel like I don't have a clue what I'm doing, but I mean it, man. Been doing it for 8 years now. And some days I feel like I have a doctorate in it, and in other days I feel like I don't have a clue.
That's entrepreneurship, man. I mean, like, you know, when I always tell people, when I started this podcast, I literally woke up one day and decided I wanted to start a podcast, and I watched a couple of YouTube videos about how to do it, and like didn't have a microphone, didn't have anything. I was literally like, I put a couple of pillows around my computer to try to improve the audio. And I was like speaking directly into the computer. And so my first like 10 episodes really suck. And my first website sucked and everything sucked. But
there's something about just starting something, right? There's something about just diving in and getting going, even though you don't know everything you need to know, because you're going to learn as you do it, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, heck, that's how we learn most things in life. And the thing that, even though I didn't know anything about what I was doing, and because I didn't really have a whole lot of help in the beginning, I think it shaped how we were able to do what we do now. You know, I had to design things in the beginning. So I had to learn how to use design software. I had to learn how to make a website. I had to learn, you know, like how to do all the paperwork and the bookkeeping and, you know, like all of that stuff. And had I not done each of those things myself, you know, when you go to hire somebody, how do you know what the expectations should be? How do you know the time requirements? How do you know, like all of these things, you know, unless you did them yourself at one point.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I think so many people are in such a rush to make everything perfect, to get things going. But you got to do those little things. You got to go through that period of mastery before you're going to be able to have the skills necessary to move forward and to lead people, right? And that's that concept that comes in again, is if you're going to be able to bring people on your team, you got to know what the quirks are in your bookkeeping. You got to know what the quirks are in the design. You got to have a feel and a vision for where you want to bring the brand to, you know, particularly with something like clothing, because, you know, there's a look and feel to everything that you need to convey, right?
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. I mean, the vision with us has always been to push people to get them active or on the move. Mm-hmm. And Oscar Mike, and I feel like that messaging, you know, it probably wasn't the easiest to grow an apparel brand with that kind of messaging. You know, if you're starting from scratch and you're really trying to do that, I mean, something like that has probably been done a million times, and by people with a lot more money to dump into the marketing and all that. You know, but then I didn't want to design shirts or apparel with like silly slogans on them or you know, all the off color stuff, or just use humor to sell shirts. Mm-hmm. Probably because I'm not that funny of a guy either. And I didn't want to have to constantly try to be funny all the time. Even though I appreciate that stuff, it also isn't, you know, the kind of stuff that I was into or wear. I'm very, very basic, you know. I like simple stuff, and you know, I think that you can see that in a lot of our brand too. I don't like a lot of like flashy things.
Now, from my understanding, Oscar Mike is really two organizations, right? There's the business, and then there's a 501c3 charity, right?
Yep, exactly.
And then one of the genius things that you set up there is that your business helps to fund the 501c3, right?
Right. So, you know, in the beginning, and it's not like that was a big master plan from the beginning. In the beginning, me and my buddies just said, we asked an attorney, a friend of ours, if he could help us file 501c3 and get it going. And he said, yeah, but it might take 18 to 24 months before you get the approval. So we just asked him to file for an LLC on the same day, because that could be done, you know, literally the same day. And we did. And, you know, we started selling some shirts. I mean, you know, a handful of them. And we just figured that would be a good way to start the momentum, get the word out there, get people like wearing the mission across their chest. You know, it was almost like asking people to carry a sign around, except people get dressed every day. And, you know, it's easier than walking around with a sign saying, you know, support this thing. 18 months later, we got the 501c3. And at that point, you know, we had already had a bunch of designs, and it was at a really interesting time, because there were a couple big charities that were, you know, being scrutinized and publicly for how they were spending their money, and, you know, people that don't really know anything about business or large nonprofits were really beating them up, especially on the internet, over, you know, where they spent money. And we just figured, you know, if we could absorb a bunch of overhead with the apparel company and a lot of like the little tasks that a nonprofit that's growing would usually have to pay for, then our ratio would be a lot better, you know? So basically if you're going to donate a dollar to the nonprofit, if you have this apparel company that's just helping absorb all the overhead as a separate entity, then your dollar can actually go to programs.
No, that's genius, man. That's a genius model as far as things go. And yeah, man, I remember that because, you know, you got certain charities out there that that are doing great work. And honestly, even the ones that are catching a lot of criticism are doing work, right? They're putting awareness out there. They're creating events and things like that. But, you know, a lot of people take issue with executives in 501c3 charities making $500,000 a year, even though they might be providing tons and tons of value, you know. I mean, it depends, but it's about where your dollars are going. And it's good to know that if somebody donates to your 501c3, then that dollar is going to go to actual programs that are actually going to reach veterans.
Yeah. And, you know, I've definitely, since I've gotten into it and since I've learned a lot more about charities and business over the last 8 years, I think when I first heard all that stuff, I was really put off by it all too. I couldn't believe what I was hearing and, you know, some of the executive compensation that was happening in the charity space. And then as I learned more and I realized what it takes, you know, if you were to ask me, it's funny, you know, like if somebody says you're the CEO of Oscar Mike, right? I don't really consider myself a chief executive officer. But because I feel like, you know, that's just such a business title that has to get earned by working your way up a corporate ladder. And I never did that. I just started something. I don't think that automatically makes you a chief executive officer, even though you could give yourself that title. So I think of myself as like, all right, today, if you told me, hey, Wounded Warrior Project needs a new CEO, would you like to be it? And I think I would really have to take a step back and be like, man, that's a $400 million a year organization.
Yep.
With a lot of, you know, that's an enormous organization that would be extremely hard to run. And you need top C-level talent for that. And in order to do that, you know, the people that you're going to put in those positions need to be compensated that way because, you know, if the CEO of Wounded Warrior Project, I think when he got in trouble, he was making somewhere around like 400 grand. And, you know, you think about what they're bringing in revenue and how big of an operation that was and people were so upset about it. It's, you know, if I was him, I would imagine, you know, catching all that flack and then just being like, okay, so I could leave here today and I could go into the private sector or the for-profit sector and I could be paid 10 times what I'm making right now,
right?
You know, to do the same job. But I basically am making 10% of what I could be making to help veterans. So, you know, like I almost started feeling bad at that point. Like, man, I don't know what the answer is because how can you get top C-level talent to run operations of that magnitude without compensating them fairly?
Yeah, you know, in some ways, I think that I wish that our education system required everybody to try to start a business for a little bit because I think that people just have such a misunderstanding of what it takes, right? Whether it's a 501c3, whether it's an LLC, whether it's whatever you're doing, I think that people just have such a misunderstanding about what it takes to run an organization like that. And, you know, it's not just in the charity world. I mean, people have problems with CEOs of Fortune 500 companies making the salaries that they make. And I just think that people don't understand that those individuals, they're responsible for so much and not just the people within their organization, but their shareholders. And a lot of people have a problem with the stock market, but if the stock market goes down, that's not just a bunch of rich bankers that go down. That's grandmothers with pensions, right? That's people's retirement funds. And everybody has an IRA, a 401k or something like that. And I think that if people had a better understanding of how finance works, of how business works, we'd see maybe a little bit different of an attitude in this country about those types of things.
Definitely. And you know, I also think about how hard it would be to start something on your own. Like, I was very fortunate because I get disability, and mm-hmm. I had, you know, something to sustain myself. But I think about it, you know, being a startup that didn't have a dollar, you know, to your name, but you had a vision and a dream or a goal, and having to compensate yourself. You know, like, I've never had to take a paycheck, which means, you know, like, that's money that gets to be retained in the business and the nonprofit, because I don't have to rely on that for an income. But I can't imagine what it would be like to start from scratch without a dollar and have to, you know, pay the mortgage and put food on the table.
No, absolutely. I mean, and you think about that. I mean, like, a guy like Jeff Bezos who started Amazon in his garage, you know what I mean? There's always a time at the beginning of any business, and I want to ask you about this because you mentioned starting in your garage, where you don't know, like, you're trying to figure out the bookkeeping, you're trying to figure out the marketing, you're trying to figure out the product, and you know, then you get a few sales, right, and a little bit of profit comes in, but then it's like, okay, I got a few sales, but now I need to grow, and I need to figure out what I need to do to grow. And I need to figure out what I need to do to get a team in here. What was that transition like for you, going from the garage to saying, and having it be like a small business with you and your buddy, to saying, okay, we need to build this thing up? And because that's a place where a lot of people fall off and a lot of people die. And I've actually been in that situation before, where I was about to grow and then I made some stupid decisions. And then all of a sudden I'm like, back to zero.
Yeah, for me, it was, you know, I talked three other guys in wheelchairs into helping me out, getting it started in my garage. And they moved to, you know, out of state to where I live. And they basically said, I was like, I'll pay for a rent for you guys for 6 months, you know, if you'll come down and help me out. And they agreed to it, and they gave me 6 months of their time. And anyway, they moved out to Illinois, and then let's see what happened. They, at the end of their 6 months, they all had to move back home, and mm-hmm. I was ready, you know, I wanted to move us into a warehouse and an office space, you know, and I probably still had another 6 months or another year before I could make that happen. But when they all left, I just kind of went like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I don't have anybody's support. I mean, I still had them over the phone and, you know, computers, but I didn't have my little unit in the garage to keep helping me out. And then there was time, once we had enough designs and we needed like real shelves instead of, you know, just some stuff we bought at Home Depot. It was quite the transition time. I really had to probably talk some people into working too much for too little, you know, in the beginning when we moved to the warehouse. And I'm surprised that it all worked out the way it did.
Man, that's I mean, when you talk about a situation like that, that's like when you're getting out of the comfort zone and then you realize that this thing is turning into like this something that it's beyond you, right? Because at first it's you, it's your baby, and then it's no longer your baby, it's your teams, it's the worlds, it's your audiences, right?
Yep. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we have people that support us all over the place that have never heard of me, and that's fine with me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's their thing, and it's, you know, it's all about the mission. And yeah, it definitely lives bigger than you.
Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want. Because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview.
So you're at a point right now where you've had a lot of success. You've experienced a lot of growth. Where are you going to take the brand? What are things going to look like for you over, let's say, the next 5 years?
Well, I mean, we don't have to grow that big. I don't have enormous dreams. I mean, it's not like we're ever trying to become an Under Armour or something like that. I just want to be able to just to be sustainable. You know, I think that I watch what happens to CEOs that grow their business, you know, like to $100 million plus levels, $1 billion levels. And it's overwhelming. You become beholden to too many people when, you know, and I already find myself spread a little thin with participating in all of our events for the nonprofit and showing up every day to work, you know, working 7 days a week and going to all the events, where I want to be able to continue doing what I do, but you know, who know, I really don't know what the future is, and I have no real exit strategy yet. I just want things to be able to be fun and comfortable, and have people, you know, being able to participate. I don't want to ever have to tell people no when they're reaching out for like sponsorships or help with getting to an adaptive sport or being a part of our programs. So if I can get to the point where I never have to tell anybody no, you know, and it's not an overwhelming number, you know, to hit that, you know, there's only so many veterans that are living with, you know, severe disabilities that are going to reach out and need, you know, want to go through the programs every year. I feel like it's a very reachable goal, and we'll get there eventually. It might take a few more years, but that's where I want us to be. And if we grow bigger than that, we'll, you know, we'll figure out when the time comes. Right now, you know, it's still every day just trying to figure it out. We're not there yet.
That's a great attitude. And you know, I think that there's this thing about, okay, are you planning for 5 years in the future and things like that? And like, I find that if I'm planning anything beyond a quarter, then I'm kind of just aloof to what the goal is. Right. And so I try to stay really focused on the next 90 days and then replan every 90 days and try to make sure I'm on track with my vision. And I think that's so important for somebody like you who's experiencing that growth, because you have to keep the vision front and center. You have to keep the mission front and center, and you can't lose track of that. Otherwise, you're going to lose the identity of the brand. You're going to lose the identity of the company.
Yeah. And you know, I have a million spreadsheets open on my computer right now.
Me too.
Probably an exaggeration, but at least 100 open right now. And I have every scenario, every type of, you know, if it goes this direction, that direction, I have every amount of growth on there. You know, where, what we could do at each level, how we can impact people at each level. And, you know, and also for where we're at tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. The big thing there, I think, is that you've got to create systems in order to keep your brain focused on where you're going, because, and those systems have to, because you can get, it's just like on a battlefield, right? You can get so attached, you get tunnel vision, you can pull yourself in the wrong direction based off of emotion, but you need to take a step back and you need to take a helicopter view of everything. You need to get yourself out of the trenches sometimes, and you need systems like that in order to help you.
I agree 100%. I mean, I, 2-3 years ago, I got to hire a chief of staff here. And then another year and a half later, I got to hire a chief operations officer. Once I got those two people on the team, I was able to do a lot more of what you just talked about. And, you know, really, I didn't have to worry about calling our manufacturers and, you know, and doing all the day-to-day stuff. I wasn't watching the people in the warehouse fill orders. I wasn't having to talk to every single person that called on the phone, you know, all those different things as we're able to put a person in each of those positions to kind of take that off of my shoulders. I was definitely able to do a lot more of the dreaming and the vision planning and, you know, like stuff like that. So, and it is necessary.
So necessary. It's so necessary, because if you don't do that stuff, you know, that goes back to the idea of leadership, because you're the one at the end of the day who's kind of guiding the ship. I mean, you have to have those people around you who are helping you. But if your vision is not coming through, then a lot of people, if they lack leadership, then everything can go off the rails.
Yeah. And if you're in the trenches constantly, you can't have that helicopter view, because you're weighed down, which is, you know, that's the way every business starts, you know, especially if you're starting from scratch with nothing. You have to do everything, you know, you got your hands in every single piece of the operation, So how can you really, you know, be developing systems and developing plans for the future and how you're going to grow? You're way too worried about the day to day and replying to 100 emails and taking 100 phone calls and, you know, all that stuff.
100%, man. So you, so right now you've got your team. What's your typical day like, Noah?
I start getting ready, about 2 hours before I leave for work. I am a quadriplegic, so it takes me quite a while to get ready in the morning. It's not a fast process. You know, funny story about that, actually. I was getting ready to do a thing with Shark Tank, and, you know, we were just about to sign the contract. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty nervous about it, but I was also excited to go in and, like, you know, meet Mark Cuban. And I figured, you know, that was going to be a cool opportunity for us. And I just made a comment about meeting Mark Cuban. And my dad said, something like, you know, he puts his pants on just like you do every day. And I was like, the hell he does. You ever see me put my pants on? You know, that guy probably seconds. You know, he doesn't have to roll around in bed for a while to get him up. And, you know, it's just a funny comment, but it's so true. You know, the thought of, I was just talking with another quadriplegic, who has his own, PR business. And we were talking about, like quad fatigue and, or, you know, like how, if you're sitting in pain all day and it takes you so long to do all of these things, like even just to get to work, by the time you get to work, you're probably already exhausted from, you know, the process of doing it and getting out in your vehicle and transferring out of your wheelchair a bunch of times, you know, to get dressed and in the shower and in your vehicle and into work, that by the time you get there, you already have less energy and more pain than most people that are ever trying to do the same thing as you.
Yeah.
And then you get to work and start replying to your emails. You start putting out the fires from the day or the night before. You start, you know, talking with your staff members and having meetings and phone calls and podcasts, and, you know, whatever else you're doing for the day. And then you go home, you work out, for a little bit, make some food. By that time, you know, time to get back on your computer, see if any other important things have come up by the time you left work and did those things. And then it's bedtime and you got to start all over again. You know, so that's a typical day. But I also have, you know, the nonprofit stuff. And it's not just coming into the office. I mean, I run both out of my office here. But I also participate in all the wheelchair rugby tournaments, hands-on with a lot of the other programming that we do with the obstacle course racing and the clinics at our compound and the fundraising, you know, all of that stuff. So I'm still all over the place, but there is some structure to my days.
That's, it's really important to keep that kind of structure. Is fitness kind of part of your company culture with the adaptive sports? Do you keep like fitness facilities on hand? Do you guys work out together?
Not really. And we work and most of us live kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So at the compound, we have a gym in what used to be, like when we got the facility, there was like this boathouse, which is just like a small little garage to the facility that we turned into a gym. And during the winter time, I use that a lot. And then during the summer, the compound is on this lake that has a 5 mile or 4.5 mile road that goes around the water. And I push my rugby chair around that every other day. And so, I mean, it's a big deal to me here in the office. Some of the other employees for sure too, but I don't push that agenda on anybody. I just, mm-hmm. you know, by doing it, maybe they will too, you know, kind of thing. We all encourage each other though.
Right. Leading by example and kind of affecting behavior through osmosis, right?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, I wasn't the one that started it. I wasn't, or the leading by example with like diet and fitness. It was other employees at the office that got me to do it. You know, I wasn't taking care of myself. Like you know, that I was telling you, I listened to your podcast about that, and it really resonated with me because I just felt like I was working anywhere from, you know, 8 to 16 hours a day, sitting behind a computer and on my phone, and I wasn't working out. I had lost all that for quite a while. And, about a year ago that all changed. I started, you know, making it mandatory to work out. I was watching a couple of the employees in the office who had all changed their diets, whether they, you know, had gone vegetarian or they were on the paleo diet I went gluten free and, I started losing a bunch of weight. You know, as a quadriplegic, it's hard to not have a belly. We're not standing upright. We don't have, any sort of torso, muscle or control. So you develop a belly fast and you're skinny everywhere else. And it all goes right there. But I found that when I cut out gluten and most of my sugars, that I lost that belly. I started pushing a lot more. I started working out a lot more. But that was all influenced by other people in the office, and it was cool to be around them and have that kind of positive influence.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's, I mean, get good people around you. That's such an important thing. And the, you know, I admire you a lot because here's the deal, man. I mean, I can't imagine what you've been through in your life and, you know, the physical limitations that you feel. I've dealt with my own physical limitations with autoimmunity. The audience knows I've suffered from ulcerative colitis and just went through a flare up, which, you know, at times is horrible, but you know, knowing what you've gone through both mentally and physically, and to still be able to do everything that you're doing, to keep such a full plate of things. And honestly, to still have the energy to try to help the world out, to help your fellow veterans, to help your fellow human beings. I just think that's amazing, man. You know, I definitely admire you for that.
I appreciate it, man. But, you know, I surround myself with people that are just doing incredible things all the time. I mean, I literally channel so many different people for the things that they have accomplished. And I surround myself, right now it's rugby season, wheelchair rugby season. And we have the only all veteran team in the country. And when I'm around these guys on the weekends traveling, you know, to these different rugby tournaments, I see what they're physically capable of. Mm-hmm. And we're always pushing each other, you know, like that whole no excuses, just work harder. Nobody, my buddy Tim always, says nobody cares, work harder. And it's so funny. I mean, he's a little bit higher level than me in the, you know, breaking the neck. So he's got a little bit less function than me, but he's probably, you know, he's more independent than I am. And I watch what he does and I'm just like, all right, I literally have no excuses because he's kicking my ass in these areas and there's no excuse for that. I just got to work harder.
Wow, man. Yeah. No, that's, it's always when you get around somebody who's got it. I mean, same thing here. We got on this morning. I'm talking about how I'm sore going through jujitsu and you're like, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know, it's just crazy how you can put things in perspective by learning other people's stories and by being around people who've done it.
Yeah. Perspective helps with everything. And if you ever need to channel any real perspective, like the ultimate, Marines can always think about the Frozen Chosen, you know. Yep. I literally think about that one all the time. Cause I'm like, man, I can't imagine that's the ultimate, you know.
I tell you, I just read this book. It's called Battle Cry of Freedom. It's about the Civil War and it's probably the best single volume ever written about the Civil War. And, you know, people are talking about political division in our country right now. People are talking about how the state of affairs is crazy. And if you read that book, I mean, you'll find, no, it's not that crazy. And, right. and you know, and the battles those guys went through, I mean, literally having shoes rotting off their feet, not getting a uniform change for 3 years. And some of the both on the Union side and the Confederate side, some of those guys fought for 4 straight years. I mean, yeah. battle after battle after battle. And then you think about that and then listen to Dan Carlin's Blueprint for Armageddon about World War One, and you know, you realize those guys are spending years in trenches that are built out of the bodies of their comrades, and the stuff they went through, and not being taken off the line for years. It's absolutely insane when you're able to do that, and you're able to see, wow, you know what, things today are actually pretty great, and
yeah.
everything I've been through hasn't been that bad.
Yep. I mean, it's hard when you want to like complain about something or you want to be upset about something to always think about those things. But if you're able to, and you start thinking about that, you can literally look around and go, all right, it's not that bad.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's funny. I read a lot of Stoic philosophy. I try to read a little bit every morning, and, you know, talking about something very similar to this, I was reading an interview with Nick Palmisano from Ranger Up, and he was talking about he literally lost $500,000 of product to damage, and he had to reimburse, I think it was $2 million to people to his customers, and it's an interview he did. I think it was with the Daily Stoic. And he was talking about how he's reading Marcus Aurelius, and Marcus Aurelius he was an emperor. He had a revolt going on. There were people trying to steal his throne, and he was dealing with all kinds of crazy stuff at the time. But he was able to see that the situation was bigger than him, and that it wasn't necessarily about him. It was about Rome. And I think that's a situation we've all got to put ourselves through. And I think, you know, in your situation where things got to that level where, you know, you experienced such loss, both physically and the loss of a loved one, you know, to some extent, you've got to get out of your own situation and say, all right, this life is bigger than I am. I'm going to dedicate myself to other people or something bigger than myself. Right.
Yeah, and it gave me purpose, which I desperately needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, dude, I think this was an amazing conversation. I really enjoyed talking to you today, man. And again, I just want to acknowledge you. I think, you know, what you're doing is absolutely awesome, and what you've been able to accomplish is absolutely awesome. And you're a humble dude. I could see that about you, but I hope you're proud of yourself, man.
I appreciate all of that, man. And yeah, I definitely am proud of it. I am. When I'm able to step back and look at it all and watch what, you know, what people are able to do with us because of the work that we put in, I'm very proud of it.
Awesome, man. So where can people find you online? What social media platforms do you hang out on the most? And of course, we'll put your website up on the show notes, but where can people interact with you the most?
Well, Oscar Mike is on all of them, or at least the main ones. Myself, I'm only really on Facebook. I think that there's an Instagram account that exists out there, but I've never really used it. Mm-hmm. I already find it hard enough to keep up with life as it is without all the social media stuff, but I am on Facebook, and Oscar Mike is on all of them.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Any last words for everybody out there?
Just stay on the move. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's how you're going to find your own purpose and better yourself.
You heard the man. Absolutely. Stay on the move and, you know, realize that this life, it can be amazing. It can be brutal. It could be horrible, but if you open up your eyes, you can see how amazing this life can be, no matter what your situation is. Noah, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. And to everybody out there, I hope you got a lot out of this episode. We're going to have all the links to Oscar Mike and to get in touch with Noah up on the show notes for this episode. And get out there and live your best lives while you can. This is Chris and Noah, and we are out.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mr. Noah Currier. I know that he is definitely an inspirational figure for me and probably has been an inspirational figure for all of you. You know, listening to that, listening to what he went through and listening to how he overcame it, you know, we really don't have any excuse for putting everything we can into trying to live this life. It's really, you know, when we think about it, how little time we have and how blessed we all really are. It's astounding to me that anybody would let this life slip away and, you know, frankly, waste it. I think that we all have a duty. We have a duty to people like Noah. We have a duty to our fallen brothers and sisters. We have a duty to ourselves. I mean, truly, to try to squeeze everything we can out of the time that we're on this earth and that we're breathing. You know, beyond that, guys, you know, as I said, if you can, if you enjoyed this episode, please share this episode out. Please let people know that the Warrior Soul podcast exists. I really don't care if you spend a dime with us ever. You know, as long as you're sharing these episodes out, as long as this information is getting into the ears of more veterans, that's what I care about. If you do want to support us in other ways, we have the Warrior Soul shop. That's up at warriorsoul.shop. We've got some great t-shirts. We have warriorsoul.academy. That's where you'll find some of my writing, some of my fitness programs, some of my business courses that I've written. And you can also check out the Warriors Obituary Society. That is our private mastermind that I mentioned toward the middle of the show that you can check out as well if you're looking to support yourself. And then beyond that, I've been trying to come up with other ways that people can contribute. We have our affiliate products. If you go to www.warriorsoulgoji.com, there's a list of affiliate businesses that I love, that I admire. I tried to get you guys the best deals possible. One of them up there is Amazon. So if you're going to buy something from Amazon anyways, you might as well just bookmark that link. And then every time you buy, you'll just support the show a little bit. But again, if you choose to do none of that and you just want to write a review and you just want to share this episode out, I'm happy with that as well. I want to thank you guys again for your support. And I want to thank you for listening. And we will be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. This is Chris, and I am out.